Hey, welcome back, everybody. Tom McNew here on the Armor of God Catholic Radio. Appreciate everybody tuning in. This is part three of our conversation about smart families. And again, Sally Waterfield, the program director, and Hillary Caceres, the executive director for Smart Families. That's smart-families.org on the interwebs. Is back to join us again. We spent some time last week getting into the science, and Sally really kind of gave us a very good laydown of the role of dopamine and what happens in our brains, kind of the why behind why this program exists. And what I really thought was interesting was the manipulation. And I'm using that word on purpose, that the social media apps are executing on all of us, not just our teenagers, but on all of us. It's just exacerbated, I think, and I think you ladies will agree, it's exacerbated in our teenagers. So this week we're going to jump into a little more of our brain functionality. I used the phrase last week about building the break, and I think that's really where we want to go, but what I'd like to start with, Miss Hillary teased us with a little story about her niece. Do you remember that?
I did. We did. So what's really exciting is that this talk was actually recorded and is available on our website under presentations, and it was about peer pressure and the science behind it. But there's a certain area in this talk that Melanie shared, the impact of peer pressure in a way that I think a lot of parents really aren't aware of. We can think about traditional peer pressure and how kids can get talked into doing something that they normally wouldn't do because their friends are doing it. And we all feel the need to want to conform, especially when we're younger. But Melanie talked about the normalization of risky behavior and how that is starting to happen due to what they're seeing so much on social media. And that's its own sense of peer pressure. And I'm going to break it down into a story that she shares. So, for example, you're on Instagram or Snapchat as a 16-year-old. And you have this amazing group of people who go to your school, whether it's a Catholic school or not, and a lot of which of the people they respect and love. And you see this one individual from your school start posting pictures of them vaping. The first thing that happens there is you think, oh my goodness, she's so well respected in the community. She goes to church, she's a good student. There are no problems with her, what I see in person, and she's vaping, like, well, maybe that's okay. Maybe vaping isn't as bad as I thought it was. Look who's doing this. And then it goes from not only seeing this person post about vaping, it goes to them posting about what type of products they're using. So next thing you know, it goes from not only is vaping potentially okay, it's wow, look how cool. There's this new scent, there's this new type of color, and the products that you can use to vape. And the normalization of risky behavior starts to really creep in a way that parents are not recognizing when it comes to social media, when it comes to messaging. Kids are sharing things that they normally wouldn't walk around and share in person, and they're sharing them online. And so the individuals who are watching this start to think, oh, well, all of these things that we would normally deem as not being okay start to feel okay. And then they start to become actually quite cool. And you start getting into the different components of it. And so that's a different type of peer pressure that has happened due to technology that we don't normally think about when you think about the bullying on a playground or what kind of sneakers are you wearing or that's not the name brand that you should be wearing. We all know like Lululemon and whatever it might be and the type of water bottle. That's the traditional peer pressure that we're used to thinking about with parents, but they're not realizing what's happening online. With the normalization of some of these behaviors. So that's a really neat talk. And she goes into it a little bit more detail, but there's science behind that. There's the science behind the need for parents, children to feel like they need to conform. And I don't know if Sally, you want to share a little bit more about that.
Really, just to piggyback on what Hillary was sharing, it's such a great talk that we held with Smart Families to really give a teenager's perspective. We are very mindful when we go in and we connect and we speak to these students that we don't want to turn up at a school and tell these children that we know how they think and we know how they feel because that's instant disengagement. So One of the things that we really want to do is engage the youth. And so that's why we featured Melanie, who had these incredible firsthand experiences of what it felt like as a teenager in this world of having to feel like you have to socially conform. And like Hillary said, there's some incredible science to back this up. There have been, for example, studies that have taken groups of teenagers and they've showed them images of somebody who is drink driving and asked them to perceive the level of threat that they felt, you know, like how risky is this behavior? And most teenagers will look at this image and think, oh gosh, no, risky behavior, drink driving, like I don't want to do that. But then they replicate this study and now they, instead of just showing this image in isolation, they actually attach some likes. So now there are other people of their age group who have liked this visual of somebody drink driving. And now the teenager thinks, well, hang on, maybe it isn't risky as I first perceived because all of these other people are liking this. And so they will actually reduce the level of risk that they think purely based on how much other people have liked it. And so this is scientifically researched. We know just from the adolescent brain that there's heightened activity in these reward regions of the brain, which means that we see an increase in risky behavior, especially in the presence of peers. And so social media is this just huge landscape where it can be forced upon these children with their growing and developing brains. And remember, our brains aren't fully developed until age 25. So they have a really long time left to grow that part of their brain.
So let's dive into that a little bit about the development of the brain. And again, well, this is going to be some science that maybe some of us haven't really touched on in a number of years, but I think this gives us a really good perspective.
I know on our previous conversations, we'd shared a bit more about, you know, this limbic system, this accelerator pedal that, and just as a reminder, if something like looks good, feels good, smells good, the part of the brain that kind of controls this sensitivity towards this thrill seeking, fun, exhilarating experiences is fully online by age 12. And so it's a different part of the brain known as our prefrontal cortex. And this is the part of the brain found above the eyebrows, towards the top of the forehead. Its most simplified understanding of this part is it's the thinking part of the brain. It's the part of the brain that will make somebody stop and pause and think, you know, should I really be doing this? If I do this, is there going to be anything dangerous? Is there going to be a negative consequence? You know, am I going to get in trouble with my teachers? Or if I do this, am I going to come into school the next day and none of my friends are speaking to me? It really is the part of the brain that helps somebody be healthy and keeps them safe. And as I just previously mentioned, this part of the brain is not fully developed until age 25. So it's this really period of a developmental mismatch. We see a lot of conflict between, you know, adolescents and age 25 with their parents, for example, with their teachers. And within this prefrontal cortex is where we have the development of our executive function skills. And these are some really important kind of higher cognitive levels of skill. Now, the way that we grow and develop these executive function skills, and these are skills such as organization, planning, empathy, you know, these really important skills that help somebody to have good judgment. We develop these skills from seeing them modeled to us and then having the opportunity to practice these skills. And so that's why at Smart Families, you know, one of our overriding messages is that, you know, family first. You are there to model exactly the kind of life that you want your children to have and enjoy. So we're not born with these skills, but we're born with the capacity to grow these skills. And these skills, like, they're just not fully developed until age 25. That's why we see a peak of bullying and cyberbullying around middle school age, because empathy doesn't start to kick in until around high school. And so when statistically we see this decrease in that kind of behavior through the high school through age 25, but it's just a really important part of the brain. that we love to tell children about too, because when children learn about their brain development and they know neurologically what stage they're in or which is the part that is really driving their behaviors, it helps them regulate their behaviors and it helps them offset some of that risky behavior. So just a really important part of the brain. And so the way that we develop the brakes is we have to see other people developing the brakes. Well, if you're on social media and all you're seeing is that accelerator pedal, that's what we're going to replicate. So just really important. I know Hillary and I have had some great discussions that sometimes it's really hard for parents to say no. I mean, it's that two-letter word. It's such an important word. But seeing that modeled is going to help them learn how to say no themselves. So it's a really important just piece of developing and raising these teenagers.
And I think if you look back in the history of society and humanity, it's really kind of simple. This is not new. We have laws where children cannot drive until 16, 17, 15, depending on the state. They cannot vote until they're 18. They cannot drink until they're 21. This is not new information. It's just we have not caught up yet with technology. The industry hasn't gone to the point where they can verbally realize and say, eek, you know what? Our children's brains are not developed yet. This is too dangerous for them. And so we as parents need to do that and to protect our children and be that brake pedal for them and use the word no. Otherwise, yeah, they're running around at the age of 10, drinking, driving, voting, and doing all the things that they shouldn't have been doing. Because perhaps at one point society was like that.
You think about this, and common sense almost says God did this backwards. He should have made it so it was the other way around, that we had a brake pedal first.
It's also how they learn. So I know although it feels awkward and definitely not how I think a parent would want this design to be established and created, but by doing things sometimes the wrong way is how a child understands and can experience and say, okay, that was a mistake. I can see that is not a decision I should make again. But the problem with technology and what we're talking about is that it is unforgiving. If a child posts something on social media that could be harmful or hurtful to somebody else, that can impact their lives forever. And we're talking about them not getting into college. We're talking about them losing their first job. We're talking about them not getting the ability to live adult life like any other parent would want a child to be able to experience. And so you have a quandary. Yes, the brain is developed in such a beautiful way where we're going to learn from our experiences, but what happens when those experiences can be copied and pasted and kept forever and ever and ever against a child? And it's a really scary, uncomfortable, and unfortunate reality that we're faced with today, and it's not going anywhere.
I just wanted to really give a real life example of what we have seen within our school network, because we are in so many Catholic schools across Texas and beyond. And we have had high school coaches share with us about students of theirs who have, in that moment decided to share or forward a message, in that limbic part of their brain, not thinking about the consequences. And these have been star athletes who've spent their entire school careers working towards, playing a sport at college and had been selected and awarded a full scholarship to go to the college. But then this child is involved in forwarding a message, in the moment, and then had lost their entire college scholarship. I mean, it breaks our heart when we hear, and this is just one story. We hear numerous stories from schools who will bring, real life examples to us of these children who unfortunately have been exploited through what they've seen, and that's what they're kind of emulating and the behaviors, and they think everybody's doing it. This is so fun. But then they don't see the consequences. And we have a lot of conversations with the students that yes, technology may be unforgiving, but your parents, God, you are met with all of this grace. And for me personally, I know we joke that, we got it the wrong way around with the brain development, but I actually think as parents, it helps us to learn grace and have mercy. And I speak this as a parent of, three children, a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old, who I sometimes feel daily I have to outpour grace because they are going to make mistakes and they are going to mess up. And it can feel in the moment like they've ruined the rest of their lives. I'm sure that child who had his scholarship taken away, I mean, I don't even want to begin to feel like the emotions he must have been feeling, but I know that he had a community that surrounded him with grace and mercy and wanted him to never have to experience that again, and nor any child have to experience that. So just unfortunate we hear these stories, but at the same time, we feel hopeful that because of the work we're doing, these are not going to be examples that we'll be giving in the future because, when we know more, we can do better.
And that leads me to a question then. So, is there a way for a child to come back? And that's probably a horrible expression, but once they've been exposed and their brains have kind of developed, is there a pathway back?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, the incredible human brain. So we have this concept of neuroplasticity, which, and it's funny you asked me this question because often we'll go into schools and we'll tell them about the brain and we'll tell them about social media. And some of the students will say, "Oh, Miss Sally, is this going to be my brain forever?" And I say, "No, that's the most incredible part of this. Neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to rewire and reconfigure itself. And we have the ability to do this throughout our entire lifetime. And in a way, if you can think about somebody who's had a traumatic brain injury, think of somebody who's had a stroke and maybe they've lost language or they've lost a skill. Well, with therapy and with, some really intense input, the brain is able to, in some situations, not all situations, but many situations, rewire itself and regain those skills back. The same concept is what is happening, especially with adolescent brains. This is this kind of the use it or lose it principle, this idea of, the more that you use a certain skill or the more that you do an activity, the stronger the neural pathways that you make within the human brain. So those things become far more efficient. You're able to recall and redo these things at a much accelerated rate. Well, the brain is able to recover, in inverted commas. So, those people who have experienced this alteration of dopamine baseline, so now they are falling into problematic use, maybe even venturing into the world of addiction. Well, with treatment and support and kind of therapy and often just conversations, just even us identifying, hey, this might be something that your brain is struggling with. We are able to really use this idea of neuroplasticity to help put some good guardrails in so that the brain can kind of regulate and go back to, this homeostasis, this where it wants to be without all of these things happening. So, yeah, that's a great question. And it's always very reassuring when the students hear, no, this is not your brain forever. Like the brain is constantly, it's changing and it's adapting. So, those people who are finding that they are feeling certain ways, when they're using social media, that's why we say delay, delay, delay. And then for those people that recognize, well, I'm already an adult, I'm a parent and I'm recognizing I'm having issues with the social media that you're talking about, we just really want to support them and help their brain to, just be grow and be and develop exactly how God intended it to be.
There's another area that I think also, Sal, and you can probably add if I miss something on the research side. Neuroplasticity is an amazing component to this. The other area is just our dopamine levels start to change. So what were normal, bandwidth or equilibrium for the number of dopamine dumps we get, for example, it starts to raise up. Especially children who are more responsive to dopamine. So let's just say in a normal day, you would normally be exposed to five or six dopamine producing activities. But you incorporate the manipulative technology that's designed to actually take advantage of those dopamine levels so you stay on it, you're getting more and more of it. So you have to then keep increasing your tolerance to it, just like an alcoholic would. You start with one drink, you move. To sadly, at some point you're able to handle five or six. It's the same thing with dopamine. And so what you look at in regards to somebody who may have been overindulging in technology, you also want to treat them in a way where we're going to remove something that has been altering their chemical makeup, not only their brain, but their response to that dopamine. And so they're physically potentially not going to feel well, right? You're going to have some of that like depression. There's a void in something that's been feeding them this chemical over time. And so that's a real life response, and something that if you do have a child or yourself decides you want to kind of pull back, just be aware you are going to feel some of those post dopamine leveling out symptoms. There might be a better, terminology for that, but you're going to see some of that depression and maybe even some anxiety.
And what we hear within this kind of, conversation is parents will say, well, I try and take them out. We go on walks, or we try and watch this, or we try and read this. And the child will say, well, it's boring. And that can be really difficult for a parent to know what to do with that, because the child will tell them this is boring. That's because they're so conditioned to this short form media, these fast moving images, like it's this dopamine like hit every time they're using this. And so when you take them out in this incredible world that God created, and you take them to see a waterfall, and their response is, well, this is boring, it can feel so hard to know what to do as a parent. But there is hope, because once we hear parents that say, we took the device away, we took the iPad, we took the smartphone. And then it was hard for maybe a few days, a week, and then my child came back. And then, my amazing child that finds joy in all of these incredible parts of the world, they returned to me. And so I just want to offer that glimmer of hope to parents. That's neuroplasticity. That is the brain able to change the pleasure threshold it feels from being in the world.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because you talked about in the presentation that we went through this second window of opportunity. Can you dive into that here for a couple minutes?
Many years ago, researchers believed that anything that a child had been through between around birth and 3 years old was going to hardwire that child's brain development for the rest of their lives. And researchers really did believe that, if a child had been through some significant trauma, then, I mean, it was a lifelong challenge that this child would have to endure. And then a few years ago, UNICEF were part of an incredible research study where they actually discovered that between the ages of 9 and 14, a child's brain went through another season of very accelerated brain development. And they came to refer to this as the second window of opportunity. And what we know is that that time frame, this window of accelerated development, it is critical that children in this window are exposed to very positive, wholesome, healthy activities, because it's during this window, this adolescent period, that it really is going to, formulate their template for success for the rest of their lives. Now, where smart families involve ourselves is we say, well, culturally and historically, when has a parent handed over a smartphone? Right in this window between the ages of 9 and 14. We often hear parents will say things, oh, well, they're going to middle school, and there's this misconception that a child now is independent enough and grown up enough to have this device. And remember, when we say smartphone, we specifically mean an internet-enabled phone. There are some great alternatives which we can get into, but they are in effect handing the child a device that exposes them to inappropriate content, misinterpretations of the world, drugs, pornography, all of these things that children will stumble upon right in this window. And it's during this time then children are really starting to, reflect on what are my interests, what are my likes. What do I want to maybe do when I, leave high school? All of these very important things are formulating during this window. So we have to protect our second window of opportunity. And parents, again, will feel very reassured when they hear there's a second window, because some parents will say, oh gosh, I gave my child an iPad when they were four. What does this mean for them for the rest of their lives? And no, again, neuroplasticity, protecting this window of opportunity. These are all things that here at Smart Families, we want to help support parents in doing. So, an understanding.
There's also some research that talks about this period of time when you look at a child's belief in a particular faith, where they start questioning, is this what do I believe, right? They're starting to see the world in a bigger way. It's really important for parents to realize who are their influences in not only what they're doing with their day-to-day life, but you can bring them to church on a Sunday, but the remainder of the 6 days a week, they're looking at content online that points them in a new direction. And this is an area of their childhood where they're going to start to think, oh, wait, hold on. I may be going to church on a Sunday, but is this really what I believe? So this is an area that you also want to consider when we talk about the influences that are happening.
We were presenting at a school, and this is actually a topic that has come up in numerous schools across all of our locations. So we had a child who shared with us that, they had a family iPad that was kept in a public, in a public space within the home, and the parents had been using the iPad to be able to watch mass. And so that was kind of the algorithm that had been set on this device. Well, the child then disclosed to us that they had been seeing some AI versions of videos depicting Jesus. And these videos were saying, you have to like and share this video otherwise. And then the consequences were terrifying for these children. Some of them said, you are going to go to hell. Your parents will not go into heaven. This very manipulative content. And so here is a child who was in fourth grade, who was at a Catholic school, hearing all of these things through their, faith journey. But then we're going home and we're being shown, unbeknownst to the parents, this horrific AI content with these monsters. And their response when I asked, what did you do from, having seen these videos? And they said, well, I didn't want to block these videos because I thought that God would be mad with me. And in that moment, we just saw the innocence of these sweet children and just the very manipulative kind of evil that comes through some of this content that these children are seeing. And it is very confusing for them, and they feel influenced by what they're seeing.
That's
It's
one of our favorite pieces we have learned in talking to some of the children at our schools is that they are seeing content that confuses them, that concerns them, that they can't wrap their heads around. I think parents can even attest to like, what did I just watch? This was like the weirdest video. And as a parent, though, we kind of brush it aside potentially and we think, okay, on to the next. But they're not realizing what happens to that child's brain when they see it. And there's a huge difference. Your brain can handle that. These children's brains cannot. And so that's really important to remind parents is it's not okay. And you need to talk to your child about it because if you don't, your child is probably
Somebody else.
not talking to anybody about it. And they're holding these misconceptions on what they're seeing and they're forming false opinions about it. And it's so evident that they don't have a safe space to share because they're afraid of either they're going to get in trouble or what they saw was wrong and they've done something wrong for it to show up on the actual screen. So one major piece I'd love to express to anybody who's listening is just talk to your children and make sure that they can come to you because number one, we know we've talked about it, their brains are not fully developed. It's not their fault that it's just that brake pedal is not there. They're not going to make a good decision. Technology is going to manipulate that. And so they need to feel that they can come to you and tell you either, oops, I made a mistake, or I've seen something that's made me upset. They need that safe space. And parents just remember, probably 9 out of 10 times, I'm not going to be, very confident in saying too much, but it's probably not their fault. There are times where children will do things that you think, oh my gosh, what were you thinking? And the truth is they weren't. They're not thinking. They don't have the capacity to think about it. So just take some space to think about that when they come to you with a particular topic.
We're going to have to put a pin in it for this week. Ladies, we would love to have you come back and actually dive into what the Smart Families program is all about. Now that we've kind of laid this whole groundwork of our brains, let's come back next week and let's get into a little bit of what Smart Families is trying to do with all of our children and all of our families. That'd be all right with y'all?
That's great.
Absolutely.
Folks, if you missed some or all of today's episode, or if you missed the first two parts of our Smart Families discussion, you can find them all on our website, armorofgodradio.com. And the link to find out more about the Smart Families team and all the great things they're doing is smart-families.org, smart-families.org. Thank y'all very much, and remember to put on the armor of God.